Chapter 8. Second Born.
We found the wreckage dead in the void. My salvage gangs were already pulling the vessel apart before we found any survivors.
From the waist up, Governess Syraxia was a myth coated in metal. She paced her chambers in dignified unrest, her forearms folded across her chest. Here was the ancient Indo-Asian goddess, Kali Ka, given form, shaped from alloy, blackened bronze, and iron and steel. I doubted she had taken the shape of a goddess of time and destruction by intent, but the resemblance was on the haunting side of coincidence. Her face was the dark metal visage of a snarling demoness, with slanted eyes that seemed to be smoothed obsidian ovals slotted into iron eye sockets. She spoke through clenched golden teeth, and the faint flicker light of a mouth-mounted vocalizer implant shone through the gaps in the prayer-engraved fangs. She was much less human, and much less godly from the waist down.
"Behold our findings," she said.
A full internal scan of the frigate Rise of the Three Suns showed on a broad monitor screen bound to the wall. She stared at it with unerring focus. To my dismay, it showed brutal damage far beyond what it had already sustained before and during the storm ambush.
"They ran for Gallium after all," said Leor. "How did they get here?"
The governess still didn't turn from the diagram.
"They did not quite reach Gallium itself. We brought the wreckage in from the edge of the Beryl vicissitude."
She pointed to a separate hololith, showing the cluster of scab-like patches of even fiercer instability in the star systems around Gallium. The Beryl vicissitude was merely one of dozens of warp wounds pockmarking the local region. The Great Eye was forever in flux, but currents and tides whirled around eddies of deeper unrest and islands of relatively stable peace. Whatever had happened to the Rise of the Three Suns after it vanished in the heart of the storm, it had appeared on the cusp of a particularly violent region.
"What of the survivors?" I asked. "Where are they?"
"They are here aboard Niobia Halo, contained within our Medici complex."
The word gave me pause. "You said contained, not recovering or recuperating. Contained within your Medici complex."
"I am very precise in my choice of words," she replied. "You know that. And I'm taking the wreckage of their vessel as payment for their restoration. If they object, I'll have them incinerated and their ashes flushed into the void."
"How generous, Governess."
"It's very generous, given the utter ruination of the frigate. Its only value now is scrap salvage. Falcus is among the survivors, and I have a degree of fondness for him, but he has tested my patience with this escapade. Hauling his ship's corpse in from the deep void took significant time and effort. Saving his life cost even more. He owes me, Kion. He owes Gallium."
"Where is the wreckage now?"
"Do I strike you as an entity with a penchant for carelessness?"
she asked, beginning to pace.
"It is hidden."
"And no doubt already being dismantled. Gallium's neutrality mattered above all. Of course, the city-state would hide a Legion vessel its workers had boarded, plundered and stolen, even if they claimed the legal right to steal it. Valakar said the survivors spoke of Lupercalios and of me." Syraxia inclined her head as though she were granting me a favour.
"Your name has featured amidst what little sense we've managed to get out of them. I will have Valakar take you to them soon. First, cease questioning me. I would like answers myself, Kion."
I watched her and said nothing. Gallium was one of my warband's preferred harbours, and Syraxia was one of my most reliable allies. Her temper was not one I wished to provoke. Remaining in her good graces meant much to me. Syraxia noted my caution. She couldn't smile. The governess wasn't as far removed from her biological roots as many of the Mechanicum's tech priest elite sought to be, but her forge-wrought face removed the option of anything as basic as human expression. Her laugh, a chuckle at best, was a surprisingly smooth exhalation of breath with the flicker of her vocalizer light.
I like you, Iskandar.
I bowed. I know, governess.
Tactical cowardice one moment and moronic courage the next. It makes for a delightful contradiction.
She kept pacing around her seclusious chamber, which was a domed platform overlooking Niobe, a halo from the southern hull section. Its scute shielding was retracted, offering an unparalleled view of the entire orbital ring, with the stars above and the world below. The red-violet threads of ice space curdled the sky, though not enough to miss the view of Gallium's distant sun, an unhealthy blue orb racked by solar storms. I turned my head to regard the two unaligned vessels, docked and locked down on the opposite side of the station to where the Tullock was refueling. Neither warship bore the insignia of their warband or their legion. Their specific allegiances were impossible to determine.
Kion,
said the governess.
What were you doing, meeting with Falcus and Leorvine Firefist?
Don't call me Firefist, Leor grunted.
The governess turned to Leor, click walking closer to him. As I said, her four-armed body was ostensibly humanoid, with its skin of blackened metal reflecting the distant poisoned sunlight. The illusion of humanity ended there. Beneath the sculpted bare stomach and breasts, utterly ruining her statuesque presence, Governess Syraxia was something resembling a Kintafros monster of Grecian legend, known also by the name Centaur. Rather than the lower form of a horse, Syraxia had remade her body into that of an arachnid, with the multi-segmented stalk legs of a scorpion or spider. Eight clawed and bladed mechanical legs clacked their way across the smooth deck, somehow never penetrating or denting the reinforced floor. A huge scorpion of dark metal, with the body of a goddess. The Martian Mechanicum would never make sense to me, but I had to admit the effect was queenly and regal in its own inhuman way. Her joints didn't whir or grind as our battle armor did. Syraxia's joints gave smooth, rolling purrs of subtle mechanical strength.
What did you say?
I said don't call me Firefist.
And why not?
He bared his reinforced bronze teeth up at her in an unpleasant grin.
Because it hurts my precious feelings.
She acquiesced with a mechanical chuckle and looked back down at me.
What was this meeting about? Why were you gathering?
It is nothing you need to concern yourself with, Governess.
I see. I appreciate what you're doing, Kion. I cannot afford to play favorites or to choose sides. And what side would I even choose? The Nine Legions wage war within their own ranks as often as against each other. The city-states and territories of the Mechanicum are just as sundered by division and divergent philosophies. As for the human colonies in the spatial disarrangement...
The what? Leor interrupted. She means the Great Eye, I said quietly.
Yes, yes, the Great Eye,
Syraxia cut in.
My point, little Tiscan, is that I admire your subtle attempt to play innocent in regard for Gallium's neutrality. But you and I are no strangers to secret truths. Let's not start playing coy now. What was the purpose of this gathering?
Warbands meet all the time, Governess. Matters of alliance, matters of conflict.
She sighed my name, turning fully to face me.
Why could you not have stayed here when I first made the offer? The Legion Wars will be the death of you, and you are so very useful. Why must you sow the seeds of discord everywhere you go? Already we are hearing word that the Third Legion wants your head for some new sin.
She prowled back and forth before us, eight bladed legs clicking. Despite her inhumanity, she was a slender thing, more graceful than might be imagined from any monstrous envisioning. Cables hung and swayed between her arachnid limbs, giving the industrial impression of webbing.
Take me to Falcus, I said.
Tell me why he summoned you together. Then I will take you to him.
What harm was there in the truth? Would it really endanger my neutral haven? Perhaps I was being too cautious. Ceraxia and Valakar had survived conflict and intrigue many times before. Falcus has acquired a seer of immense power. He believes the prophet can lead him to find the vengeful spirit. Lihor and I agreed to aid him.
Why would you do that?
Lihor answered for me.
The Third Legion took the War Master's corpse.
A rumor.
Ceraxia waved three of her hands in a dismissive gesture.
And likely a lie.
Falcus was there, Governess, I replied. I trust him.
Falcus made no mention of such an event.
He seeks to maintain Gallium's neutrality, I pointed out. As do I. That was flattery of a kind. Far more likely that Falcus chose not to reveal the truth to Ceraxia, knowing she would never take a side either way. But she hesitated then, rather than speak immediate condemnation. Behind the lenses that served as her eyes, the possibilities began to unwind, spooling through her thoughts. She gave a surprisingly demure shudder.
A threat, if true, she admitted at last. A significant and tasteless threat.
Cloning, Lior agreed, by saying the word like a curse.
Ceraxia stood above me again, leaning down enough that our faces almost touched. Thin filament circuitry ran across the epidermal layer of her black metal skin, and the chemical smell of her nearness returned tenfold.
I told you to stay out of this war, Kion.
Yes, you did.
I told you to let the sons of Horus walk alone into history's pages without interfering, for those who take their side tend to fall alongside them. I'd hoped the Legion Wars might end with the fall of Lupercalios, yet that seems a forlorn desire now.
I felt Lahore's eyes drilling into the side of my skull. Gaia circled us, ignored by the governess, but watched by Valakar and his armed minions, standing by the gantry stairway that led down into the station's ring.
Well?
Ceraxia asked, with the impatience of a tutor expecting an answer from a student. Her obstinacy grated on me. I doubted Sargon's words were anything but a trap, and I had no way of knowing if chasing the vengeful spirit was a fool's pursuit. I was hardly blind to my own desperation in all of this. I have to attack the Canticle City, Governess. Do I need to detail the ways in which a Primarch reborn could tip the balance of the Legion Wars? When all our fathers are lost and ascended into the great game of the Pantheon. Ceraxia, it does not matter whether the sons of Horus are alive or dead, or whether the vengeful spirit is a madman's dream or lying in wait to be reclaimed. The Emperor's children cannot be allowed to win the Legion Wars.
Conjecture, she said with an imperious air.
Not conjecture, possibility.
There is more to this than idealism, Kion. Do not play the proud hero in my presence.
Lihor sniggered, rather like a child. I let it pass, for Ceraxia was correct. I want the ship. I want the vengeful spirit. That almost swayed her, I was sure of it. Only with reluctance did she dismiss the idea with a sigh.
Tempting. So very tempting, sorcerer. But no, I cannot take sides. I will not stop you, though nor will I aid you.
Well, that was no surprise at all, and I preferred her ambivalence to her lecturing. I could not resist one last twist of the blade. The day may come when you have to take a side, Governess.
Do you believe so?
Asked the goddess monstrosity.
For what reason would I add my forces to either side? I owe nothing to the sons of Horus, and bear the Emperor's children no tormented grudge. The Empire of the Eye will still thrive, even if you foolish post-humans can't put down your bolters and cease murdering each other. Thousands of worlds exist in this realm untouched by the Nine Legions. The Great Crusade is over, Kion. The galaxy no longer belongs to the Legiones Astartes, and the Eye never did. If only you could all learn that lesson. But no, instead you fight and bleed and die and drag us all down with you. So wasteful. So very, very wasteful.
I kept my silence, letting her speak. Ceraxia steepled her fingers, all 16 of them, with her four thumbs as she spoke.
Gallium's neutrality is recognized by many warbands from across the legions. It is a sanctuary, and must remain so.
Times change, said Lahore. The Legion wars...
Hush!
She rested her hand on Lahore's head, as though she were a priestess anointing a worshipper.
Hush, Centurion Ucris. I do not possess the kind of heart or mind that will bend to any convictions you are capable of making. But you are with Falcus, whom I admire, and Kion, whom I cherish, so I will not punish you for your lack of respectful manners.
Was the world-eater's graceless reply. Ceraxia lifted her hand away. A wise move, for I suspected she'd been about to lose it to a blow from a chain axe. Lahore was looking directly at me.
I've heard warbands speak your name in whatever passes for fear, and I've heard it cursed by men and demons alike. It never occurred to me that someone would actually like you, Kion. Eshaba, I replied in Nakrakali, the mongrel tongue of his legion.
Lahore smirked at my polite thanks, but Ceraxia reached out one of her four arms to run a black fingertip down my shoulder guard. She traced my name, written in Prosperine upon the cobalt ceramite. A target lock chimed on my retinal display as it framed her face. She smelt of physoline, of gunsmoke, of dragon's breath.
It's the respect he shows, World Eater, and the vision he brings to his work.
Her voice was gentler now, her focus drifting back to Lahore.
Kion is an example of what the legions could become, if they allowed themselves the luxury of evolution. I like the way he carries himself with no pretension, and respects the autonomy of the Mechanicum's colony worlds. I like the way his name echoes across the eye. The mage who sought to stop Ahriman's madness. The sorcerer who stands with the alien angel. The warrior who sells his axe and sorcery to the highest bidder.
She looked back to me then.
And they do bid high, do they not? All that heavy iron and armored steel, forever adding to your syntagma?
I thought of the priceless relic robots aboard the Taloc. The hundreds I'd gathered over the decades, all woven into the gestalt consciousness of the anamnesis. Woe betide any enemy foolish enough to board my warship.
How is the anamnesis? The governess asked.
She is well.
Good. Good.
Ceraxia was still staring at me. I could give speeches to regiments of warriors before a battle, or order 1,000 slaves to their deaths without thinking twice. Yet before Ceraxia's glare, I felt suddenly self-conscious.
Give her my kindest regards.
I shall, governess.
Valica, take them to the survivors of the Rise of the Three Suns. And Kion?
Governess?
Don't expect too much from any of them, my sorcerer. The Justarin are not what they once were.
Niobia Halo's Medicae chambers were more akin to workshops than places of healing. We walked among them, and where the slaves and thralls bowed before me and made haste to scatter before my path, they watched Nefertari with nothing short of terrified hatred. The Imperium loathes aliens with a veneer of shallow hypocrisy, as rogue traders, void explorers, and desperate generals have dealt with the galaxy's Xenos breeds on the Imperium's frontiers since our species first left Terra. But in the Empire of the Eye, inhumans are truly loathed beyond all else. This is the domain of man and demon, born with the death of an alien empire. Hundreds of figures populated the Medicae chambers, as might be expected on a station the size of Niobia Halo. Machines, whose function I could only guess at, rattled and thrummed in sockets and cradles throughout each room, connected to life support engines, plasma cyclers, vitae infusers, and a wealth of even less obvious equipment. Half of the machinery looked alive. Veins showed instead of cables in living, contoured metal. The gods alone knew what law the Mechanicum was putting to use here. Valakar led us, earning protestations from menials and minions as we passed. We moved through the communal chambers, room after room, into the guarded vaults beyond. Runes flashed on my retinal display as the temperature dropped. Lahore and Nefertari, who were both barefaced, breathed mist into the chill air. The moment we entered that vault, I had to stop and clutch the iron doorframe. Hunger washed over me and through me, savage enough that it made me sweat. Gaia breathed a low snarl at my side.
I smell secondborn. What's wrong? Asked Lahore. What in the gods' names is wrong with you?
Nothing. Nothing. It took a moment to shield my mind against all intrusion, barricading myself from sensing the emotions of others. Doing so was sudden and stark, like closing one's eyes or suddenly going deaf in a crowded room. But better that than recoil against the overwhelming sense of starvation in the chamber. Whatever was in here was dying. I was amazed it wasn't already dead.
Secondborn, Gaia pulsed again.
We faced a long, high wall of upright immersion cocoons and stasis coffins. Things, humanoid but not human, thrashed in the reddened fluid of each pod. Appendages that resembled hands clawed uselessly at the reinforced transparent ward glass. Tortured smears of features that were once faces bubbled up through the murk, sticking to the front of the pods and staring out at us. Their jaws worked in futility, leaving scum stains on the glass where their fangs scratched and their long tongues lashed. Secondborn. Gaia was right. All of them were secondborn. I felt the minds of the men they were, and the inhuman thoughts of the things wearing their bodies. A blend of mortality and the warp, no longer the former, not entirely the latter. Emotion given form in flesh. To be psychically gifted among a cluster of demon-possessed souls is to hear the conflicting wants and hungers of countless conflicting essences. Yet I felt little of that here. The demons at war within the bodies of the imprisoned warriors were so similar as to resemble each other down to their innermost cores, no different from mirror images of one another. It was as if they were all born of the same emotions, with the same lusts and cravings. That degree of symbiosis between even closely bound demons was beyond rare. My skin crawled with the unnatural notion, even as I drew closer, fascinated by the possibility. I moved to the first tank, staring at the writhing shape within. Something crashed against the warding glass, its mandibles straining. The bones of its face were elongated and jagged, far beyond human. Whispery traces of its bestial hunger stroked at the edges of my mind, but I was well prepared to resist this time. It still wore its battle-damaged armor, cast in the charcoal black of the Justerin. Vestigial wings trailed through the immersion fluid, too confined to stretch out wide. Things of dirty bone and leathery membranes, darkly majestic in their own way. They seemed to swell and grow in rhythm with the thing's heartbeat. Behind me, Lahore asked,
"How many did you pull from the Three Suns' wreckage?"
Valakar gestured to the tanks lining the walls, each one hooked up to chemical filters and vitae-sustaining engines.
"These 20. Another few in the next two vaults."
He was passionless as he reported.
"The human crew was slain. Falkas said they were devoured when the warp core ignited."
So that was the flash of energy we'd seen in the storm's heart. Phalcus and his warriors had managed to escape to the Rise of the Three Suns, only to meet with disaster when the ships sought to flee. It was all too easy to imagine the Flood of Neverborn drawn to the beacon of the warship's detonating warp core, and the thousands of unprotected human souls aboard. Had Sargon anything to do with this? Had he tried to guide the ship here? Gallium was Phalcus's most obvious point of call in such an hour of need.
We're keeping them numbed with our chemics, Valakar added. Some of them are lost. Others still show signs of who they were.
I was reluctant to ask after the word-bearer's prophet. I trusted Valakar as I trusted Syraxia, but I was not sure I wanted either of them seeing how deep my interest really ran. And the less they knew, the less they could reveal if it was forced from them. We walked on. Several of the Sons of Horus had been pulled from their armor. Several had not. Phalcus, I sent into the flesh tanks.
Gaion.
My brother's voice, though only barely, coming from a pod by the western wall. We drew nearer to him. Nefertari whispered something I didn't hear in my distraction, and Lahore cursed in his legion's ugly, contrived tongue. When warriors of the Legionis Astartes take crippling wounds, they tend to react in two ways. The first of these is shame. Not melancholy or sorrow, but an honest and savage shame. The shame of surviving when your battle brothers have fallen. The shame of being unable to hold the line again until your wounds are tended. It isn't a whining sense of mawkishness, but a wound to the psyche as much as the body. When you can no longer fulfill your sole purpose, the very reason you were elevated above mortal men, there will always be a sliver of shame. Doubt cuts into your core. The second reaction, much more visible, is rage. Sometimes this is artificial or carries a theatrical edge to quench the feelings of shame. More often, it is simple anger. Anger at yourself for allowing this to happen. Anger at your worthless luck. Anger at your foes for whatever treacherous movement slipped beneath your guard. The rage can be stained by humor or defiance, or vows of retribution sworn to the brothers at your bedside. Inner strength will manifest any number of ways, but anger lies at the emotion's core. When I reopened my senses to bond with Phalcus once more, I sensed neither of the customary soldierly emotions I had been expecting. Instead, I sensed the volcanic, bitter presence sharing his form, and I sensed his own weariness as a shroud around his mind. He was fighting for control of his own body, and he was so very, very tired.
Kion.
I'm here, Phalcus. I approached the glass tank, looking in at the clawed creature my brother had become. I wanted him to feel my nearness, if such a thing was possible. Phalcus was curled over, almost fetal in the bubbling suspension fluid, pinned at the heart of a web of chemical feeds and nutrition excretion cables. Skinless muscle showed with strings of viscera still trailing away from the bare meat, muddying the surrounding liquid. Evidence of mutational lethality showed on his naked form. Knives of yellowing bone pushed through joints and muscle groups in ivory spines.
Neverborn, Kion. Thousands of them. We tried to run. We came under fire. The warp core. The ship was breached.
The duality of his voice, a man's sincerity and a demon's smiling whisper, added a malicious edge to his tones. I understand, Phalcus. What of Sargon?
Gone.
So, Sargon had fallen. Did that change anything? Could we sail into the unknown with no guide? Would we even wish to sail there at all, heading into a trap based on a dead man's promise? Yes. I wanted Horus reborn dead. and I wanted that ship. Without Sargon, though.
No,
Falkus pressed. He heard my thoughts and answered them.
Not dead, Kion. Gone.
I stared at the monster with its flesh in flux. Gone? You mean he vanished before the Neverborn attack?
I cannot say for certain. We escaped to the rise of the Three Suns, though it shattered our teleportation crucible. The ship ran. One moment Sargon was there, ready to guide us to safety. The warp core ignited. There was light and sound and burning metal. Then came the Neverborn.
I said nothing, letting my suspicions form. Never in all my years, not then and not since that night, have I met an altruistic prophet. Every seer is out to seek something for themselves, following their own agenda. I wondered just what this word-bearer had intended, and what he had wrought with his power. I'm getting you out of here, Falkus.
I can still feel my fingers,
the Revenant told me, in a strained husk of Falkus's natural voice. Its vicious talons scraped against the glass.
I can feel every atom of my body shivering, changing.
Beneath his words, I could feel the same thing. The demon inside his body was flowing through his bloodstream, mutating all it touched. A slow process, but an inexorable one. Bide, my brother. I will get you to the Talok. The Revenant twitched in the murk once more. I hated hearing its rasping voice.
The vengeful spirit, he said. Will you still help me find it?
You are fortunate to be alive at all. This quest has already cost you a fleet, hundreds of warriors and thousands of slaves. The creature crashed against the front of its tank, claws reaching for me. The slit maw gnashed as though it sought to feed on my flesh.
I will find Abaddon. I will find Abaddon.
Falkus.
I will take the vengeful spirit. It is the hope of my legion.
Be calm, my brother. I will aid you. Of course I will aid you. I am here, am I not? The Revenant slowed in its threshing.
They keep us sluggish with cognition suppressors and adrenal nullifiers, preventing escape.
The governess's precautions, nothing more. I had dealt with secondborn before, countless times. I would not keep them restrained. I had no need to.
Free me, Kion.
True to form, even his ravaged and harrowed form exuded annoyance at his trapped fate. But free him from what? The bonds of imprisonment here or from the demon within? Despite my strength, there are limits to any man's power. Driving a demon from mortal flesh was not a matter of simple exorcism, like some priestly prayer or shamanic chanting. The reality was almost always fatal to the host. I will free you, my friend. Once you are aboard the Talok, we will consider demonic banishment. The broken man convulsed in the fluid, shaking, bleeding, writhing. At first I thought his anger had broken through at last, but it was an uncontrolled spasm that bent his body in painful wrenches. Was it critical organ failure? His biosigns had neither peaked nor plummeted, yet he continued to shudder, the fanged hole of his mouth gaping and quivering. His mutated form bled and shook and thrashed in its suspension restraints, talons opening and closing. And then I heard it, across the tenuous link between our minds. He wasn't dying. He was laughing.